Philo Torah Zoom Shiur for Yom Revi, Wednesday, Erev Tisha B'Av, 5786, corresponding to July 22nd. And of course, not there. Now it is. Hold on. Tehillim Kuf, Mizmor LeTodah, Hariul Adonai Kol Haaretz, Ivdu Et Adonai B'Simcha. Ba'u lefanav birnana, du'u ki Adonai hu Elohim, hu asanu v'lo anachnu amo v'tzon marito. Ba'u sh'arav betoda, tatzerotav betehila, hodu lo baruchu shemo, ki tov Adonai le'olam chasto v'ador v'ador emunato. Mark, Kuf, 20.
Lamanatse Achmid Mor David, Ya'anka Adonai Beyon Sarai, Yisagev Hashem, Elohei Ya'akov, Yitlach Ezra Chamikodesh, Ubitzion Yisadeka, Yidkor Kumi Chosecha, Viola Sechay Yadach and Esela, Yitain Latach, Vavefa Lecholat Sechay Yimale, Nirvana Bichu Asecha, Ukshem Elohinu Nidgol, Yimale Adonai, Komish Ala Secha, Ata Yadati, Ki Hoshia Adonai Mishicho, Ya'ani Yomisha Mekacha, Obi Rosh Yesha Yimina O, A leva reth of A leva susim, Banapu Bishem Adonai Elohim Nazki ear him a kara ugana follow, Banapu Kamu, Vanis Odaad Adonai Hoshia Hanoki Aninu Yom Kor Eno.
David, Kuf Kaf Aleph 121.
Yerlam Alos, Esoena Yelahari, Mayain Yavo Ezri, Ezri May Madonai, Osei Shemaim Vares, Al Yitain Lamotraglacha, Ayanum, Shomracha, Hine, Lo Yanum, Lo Yishan, Shomer Yisrael, Adonai Shomracha, Adonai Tzilcha, Ayajiminacha, Yomam Hashemesh, Lo Yakeka, Viareach, Baloila, Adonai Yishmar Chamikora, Yishmar Esnafshecha, Adonai Yishmar Tzeischa Voecha, Me'ata V'ad Olam.
Mark.
Mishaberach Avosinu Abraham Yitzchak Yaakov, V'yivorech Eschayalei Tzeva Hagana Yisrael, V'esanshei Kochuz HaBitachon, Ha'omedim Amishmar Artinu, V'arei Eloheinu, V'alochamim Ba'adenu, Min Halbanon V'ad Midbar Mitzrayim, U'min Hayam HaGadol Adavo Harava, U'komakom Shehem, Bayabasha, Ba'avir U'vayam, Yitain Adonai Ezra Yevenu, Akamim Aleinu, Nigafim Lifneihem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yishmor V'yatzil Eschayalinu, Mikol Tzara B'tzuka, Mikol Nega Machala, V'yishlach Baruchah V'atzacha B'chamas Yedehem, Yadber Asoneinu Tachtehem, V'yatarim B'chesar Yeshua, U'bateres Nitzachon, V'yikuyam Bahem HaKasuf, Ki Adonai Eloheichem, Ha'olech Imachem Lihilachem Lachem, Imoyevichem, Lahoshiaschem, V'nomar Amen.
Amen. Okay.
Achinu.
Sorry. Together. Achinu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara v'ashivya, ha'omedim bein bayam, bein bayavasha v'ein ba'avir, ha'makum mirachim aleihem, v'yotunim mitzara l'irvecha, u'meyotam ura, u'mishibud l'chah, ashta ba'agala u'vizman kariv, v'nochah, amen. At the request of Judy, in the name of Judy Ann Susan, Shir is dedicated to the memory of Shaya Feivel ben Baruch, Zichrono Livracha, whose yahrzeit is today.
Yeah. Yes.
You want to say anything?
Just a young man in 20s, Susan, early 20s. A real guten Neshama. A real guten Neshama. Unfortunately, he was tragically taken along with his girlfriend in a car crash.
Okay.
Amen.
As I mentioned on Monday, officially in the afternoon, which it is for some of us, of Erev Tisha B'Av, the learning should be restricted to sad topics, not general, regular stuff. So I'll try to do that. Want to review some practical things for Tisha B'Av, but let me start with the following. I heard Rabbi Breidowitz's shiur from last night this morning, and he said a couple of things that to me were new ways of looking at things, and he reminded me of other things. First of all, he said, "What are we mourning?" You would think that with 1,956 or 58 years since Churban Bayit Sheni, that we're mourning Bayit Sheni. Bayit Rishon lasted for 410 years. It was destroyed 70 years later. The Beit HaMikdash again was being rebuilt. But the fact of the matter is that we're mourning the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, maybe even more than the second. And that's because the second, as I've mentioned in the past, was a pale shadow of the Beit HaMikdash the way it should be. It was, on the one hand, physically more beautiful, on the other hand, spiritually lacking. To me, one of the major things is that the Kodesh Kodashim I mentioned on Monday was empty in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash. At the end of the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, before it was destroyed, it already was removed and hidden. And I don't think it ended up in the Vatican or in the army supply store that you see in Raiders of the Lost Ark. We don't know where it is, but it wasn't there since before the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. No Aron Kodesh, an empty Kodesh Kodashim, which had the Kedusha of Kodesh Kodashim, regardless of the fact.
Sorry, I think you meant to say before the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash.
Yes, thank you. I did. So it's been a long time since the Aron is gone. In the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, the Kohen's Begadim were physically the same, but the extra spiritual dimension of the Choshen, the breastplate, which we call the Urim V'Tumim, which gave it miraculous powers, didn't exist in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash. I think even more than what was missing in the second Beit HaMikdash was people. 20% of the population went back to Yerushalayim to build the second Beit HaMikdash. That means 80% of the people stayed in Bavel and are doing very similar to today, where we have Torah in Bavel and everything we need in Bavel, and who needs to go and back to Yerushalayim. So that's what we're mourning. Rabbi Breidowitz mentioned also, which I think I remember as well, that during the whole time of the second Beit HaMikdash, Tisha B'Av was observed. It wasn't suspended. The other fasts were Shivaser B'Tammuz, Asara B'Tevet, Tzom Gedalia, related to Churban Bayit. In different ways. They were suspended during the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, but Tisha B'Av was observed because of all the things that were lost and not restored. And if we're talking numbers of people, I think I mentioned, 130 years before Churban Bayit Rishon, the majority of the population was exiled. So that was the whole northern kingdom, except for Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Binyamin and Shevet Levi and a few pieces of different Shvatim who lived in the southern kingdom or whatever it was called. But the whole northern kingdom was gone and lost, and we still don't know about them. Every so often you hear that the Jews who came from India claimed to be B'nai Menashe, and the Ethiopians claim this and that. We don't know. So Churban of the physical buildings, of the spiritual buildings, of the people, exile and wholesale murder are all things that we are mourning on Tisha B'Av, which go back way before 1950 whatever years ago. So we're talking about another 480 years before that, with the first Beit HaMikdash, and sometimes in the end, the fact that there was rampant Avodah Zarah going on among the Jewish people during the time of the first Beit HaMikdash. Now it leads to the statement in the Yerushalmi, which I mentioned in the past, and that is any generation in whose time the Beit HaMikdash is not rebuilt, it's as if it were destroyed in that generation. Which means, when was the Beit HaMikdash or the Batei Mikdash destroyed? Now, this generation, yours and mine, because we have not been zocha yet for the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash. Now, Rabbi Breidowitz put a twist on that, which I think is very scary if you think about it. He says it isn't just that we have not been zocha to the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash and the Geula Shleima. It's that we continue to be guilty of the same averot that got the first and second Beit HaMikdash destroyed. So if you carry that a little further, which is what he did, it goes something like this. Second Beit HaMikdash, Sinat Chinam. Is there Sinat Chinam in our Jewish societies? Sadly, yes. Lashon Hara. Is there that in our communities? Sadly, yes. So we don't need to speak more about that. I mean, we do, but not to explain how we could say something like that. Respect for Torah, respect for Talmidei Chachamim between themselves and of them. But then you go back to the first Beit HaMikdash and the statement, which is the accepted statement that the first Beit HaMikdash was destroyed because of the big three, Gilui HaRayot, Shfichat Damim, and Avodah Zarah. So for that, we have to ask ourselves the question, well, wait a minute. Okay, I know the Sinat Chinam thing, that's not an easy thing to talk about, and Lashon Hara and respect, but Gilui HaRayot, immorality in sexual matters, and Shfichat Damim, bloodshed, and idolatry. What does that mean? So he gave different answers. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, partially because I don't remember the whole thing. I was listening to it while I was doing some other things. Anyway, don't tell him that. But basically, he said this. Take, for example, bloodshed. What's the right word? One form. Not the best word, but one form of bloodshed is embarrassing somebody. And that's well known that that's equivalent to spilling blood physically because the blood drains from a person's face when he's embarrassed. And psychologically, it's a devastating kind of thing. So each of us as individuals and as members of a community and Klal Yisrael need to examine the fact, just make it personal. Am I responsible for embarrassing somebody? And what did I do about it? Have I asked the person's forgiveness? Have I changed my behavior to avoid that kind of thing? Now, I'm not talking just about a one-shot thing. It could be a habitual thing. And when it comes to idol worship, the equivalent of idol worship today, today at any time, is anger. Blind anger is considered a form of avodah zarah because it denies momentarily and uncontrollably God's creation of the world and of all human beings, equal and in his image. And anger is one of those traits, maybe the trait, that is among the worst. Rambam, when he describes other patterns of behavior, says the best path is to take the middle ground. Don't be overly this way, don't be overly that way, except anger. He says you have to go out of your way all the time to be so much a not angry kind of person that when something triggers anger, you're far away from it already. Now, I could say that doesn't describe me, because I do get angry at things. And what comes to help me a little is something I heard from Rabbi Zev Leff a long time ago, and that is that a person is not held accountable for a first burst of anger. Everybody has a temper of some sort. Something triggers it, you get angry. Your first reaction is not your not in your control. It's what you do with it that is in your control. And that's where bearing a grudge comes in, because bearing a grudge is like perpetuating anger at somebody. You got angry with him, so do something about it, positive. Forget about it, forgive him, talk it out, whatever. Bearing a grudge is perpetuating an expression of anger. And that is akin to Avodah Zarah, which is one of the Averot that brought about the first Beit HaMikdash to be destroyed, and any generation in whose time it's not rebuilt, meaning any generation whose people are also guilty of X, Y, and Z, A, B, and C, have not yet been zochet to the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash. Comments before I move on. Questions, your own way of saying it, agreeing, disagreeing, whatever. Okay. Tachlis, practical stuff. All the restrictions of your of Tisha B'Av begin a couple of minutes before sunset. So in Yerushalayim, we're talking about a sunset of 7:47, 7:48, which means 7:45. You have to already stop eating and drinking and make sure your shoes are off and so on and so forth. I learned an interesting thing, which I'm just throwing out for your pondering. When you remove, well, all right, let's give the introduction to this. I don't know how many of you actually practiced it, but I'm sure you all know that the official proper way to put on shoes is put on your right shoe, then your left shoe, tie your left, and then tie your right. And when you take them off, you untie your right, untie the left, take off the left, and take off the right. On Erev Yom Kippur, not Tisha B'Av, Yom Kippur, one is supposed to take off his right shoe first, because he's not just taking them off not to have them on. He's taking them off because one of the Inuyim of Yom Kippur is not wearing leather shoes. So when one removes them, it's lichvod Yom Kippur, and therefore he's doing a mitzvah in essence, in which case the right has priority over the left. On Tisha B'Av, it's not the same thing. On Tisha B'Av, I saw in a sefer that you do the same as you always do. If you're wearing leather shoes, which I don't know how many people wear leather shoes all the time, you take off your, you untie your right, untie the left, take off the left and then the right, because It's not a mitzvah to be without shoes. It's usur to be with leather shoes. Now, I'm saying this and I'm spending the time on it because it sounds, on one way of looking at it, as extremely picky. I remember fondly and not so fondly a student blurting out when I mentioned something in class about shoes. They said, "That's the dumbest thing I ever heard." A little bit more mature reaction is, "Do you think God cares whether we take off our right shoe first and our left shoe first?" And the answer is that Jewish law and Jewish practice, which is called halacha, literally means walking. Halacha. The way you walk through life. It's much, much more than a religion, and it impacts on many, many things that we do, which the average person would say, this has nothing to do with being religious. And the answer is it does. Now, is it the worst thing in the world to take off your right shoe first? No. Are you going to be punished for it? No. But I believe that dismissing the idea without learning more about it, without reading something about it, without realizing that it is a way of bringing a certain discipline and a message to ourselves. The right has a certain priority over the left. That goes in which hand you wash until you let your dayim first. It goes in which hand you hold a Sefer Torah. It goes for which hand the lulav and the other two minim go, as opposed to the etrog, preference for the right, and lefties switch that, and a whole bunch of other things. And again, it's not the end of the world, but it's a reminder. Right represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Midat HaRachamim. Left represents his Midat HaDin. And we would like to be treated by his Midat HaRachamim and not so much by Midat HaDin. Tirza.
Yeah, did I understand hear you correctly? Did you say a person who's a lefty reverses it, starts with the left and not with the right? Or maybe I misheard you or
No,
misunderstood
you
you.
didn't misunderstand me because I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about Netilat
Oh no, okay.
Yadayim.
What about a person who's left-handed and does
Washes
everything?
the left hand first. Now, without going into all the detail, because I'd have to open up a sefer I have on left-handedness. I love those one-topic sefer. It's a whole sefer about all kind of things, and then you read it and you say, "Oh, I never thought of that. Oh, I never thought of that." So basically, it goes like this without details. There are some things that always are preferred for the right, and a lefty doesn't change those. But then there are personal things that the lefty's left hand is his right. Sounds confusing.
Meaning dominant.
Huh?
Meaning dominant.
Meaning dominant and meaning the equivalent of the other people's right hand. So it does affect some things. As far as the shoes, I would say it does. In other words, a left-handed person would put on his left shoe first, tie it, and then tie his right. Because the right, no, wait a minute. He would put on his left.
No, but he would tie the right one because he wears his tefillin the other way.
Yeah, but wait a minute. We meaning right-handed people, put on our right shoe, put on the, oh yeah, I forgot the putting on of the shoe. Okay, so he puts on his left, a lefty. He puts on his right, ties the right, because that's where he ties his tefillin, and then ties the left. And again, not the end of the world, not the most important thing to mention, but to me, it's those little things that fill in the picture. I always use the mashal of a 1,000-piece puzzle, beautifully put together, and there was one little piece of the sky that he can't find. That's missing. So there's the whole beautiful picture, all of the detail is there, and the flowers and the mountains and whatever. The sky has a little tiny hole in it. So it's the whole picture. Anyway, that's removing shoes, which on Yom Kippur is like a mitzvah. So the right goes first. And on Tisha B'Av, it's avoiding an Isur. So you don't do the right first. You do it the regular way. Okay. So that all starts a little before sunset. Maariv is the lighting in a shul traditionally is reduced. There are some places that people use candles or flashlights for Eicha and otherwise. That's a symbolic kind of thing that our Mikdash Ma'at, our miniature temple, is reduced in its beauty by lowering the lighting, by removing the curtain from the Aron, by removing the covers from the Shulchan and the Amud. And make it noticeably bare bones, less attractive for Tisha B'Av, and all of this is restored for Mincha on the next day, on Tisha B'Av day itself. Maariv is regular, sort of. Maybe the tone is a little subdued, and we move on to the next idea. The next idea is that there are three different aspects of Tisha B'Av laws. One of them is a fast day like Yom Kippur. Now, Yom Kippur is not a mournful day, which means Tisha B'Av is not copying everything related to Yom Kippur, except for those things that are related to the fasting, which means no eating and drinking, no use of leather shoes, cosmetics and lotions, bathing and washing, and marital relations. Those are the five inuyim of Yom Kippur, and they apply on Tisha B'Av as well. But that's one aspect of Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, in addition, has practices of mourning, Mourning. Yom Kippur does not. Yom Kippur is a serious day, but it's not a sad day. In fact, it's a joyous day, if you could get to that point of appreciating the joy of Yom Kippur and what it means. But Tisha B'Av is a sad day, and therefore the Torah learning is restricted except for sad themes. I'm reading such as the books of Eicha and Eov, certain parts of other books of Tanakh, the laws of Tisha B'Av, the laws of mourning, and so on. No exchange of social greetings. Hi, how are you? I haven't seen you since, 5 years ago, the last time we met at the Kotel on Tisha B'Av. None of that stuff. And interestingly, I saw in a sefer, I don't know why, Mazel Tov is permitted. Go figure. Sitting on the ground or on a low stool is also a mournful practice, and that's not done on Tisha B'Av, except until Chatzot. Then you have a third dimension of Tisha B'Av rules, which is a reduction of luxuries and comfort. And this gets a little vague. Once upon a time, the term that was used was to turn your bed upside down. That doesn't make any sense in our context today. Flipping the mattress also doesn't do anything. But in the olden times, the bed was comfortable on the top, but if you turned it over and you tried to sleep on it, it was less comfortable. So there are people on Tisha B'Av now who will sleep on the floor. Some people will take away a pillow. If they use two, they'll use only one, or take away all the pillows. This is very personal. If you say, I can't sleep without a pillow, then don't take a pillow away. And I don't think you have to put rocks in the pillowcase. Just an idea to choose from, a train of thought. I wanted to share this with you. My daughter got a delivery from Shein. Shein is like AliExpress, you know, one of those places. And my granddaughter was very excited because it contained a couple of blouses or dresses for her, which she said, I'm not even going to unwrap until after Tisha B'Av. One of the other things that she got in the package was a new phone cover. And she said, I'm not going to put it on until after Tisha B'Av. Now, I think if you check all of the sources, you will find about wearing new clothes as a no-no. I doubt very much you will find putting on a new cover on your phone among the things that are not supposed to be done on Tisha B'Av. But my granddaughter is 16, and she was excited about getting that new cover for the phone, whatever it is. I'll have to make sure I compliment it when I see it. The fact that she, on her own, said, I'm going to wait till after Tisha B'Av is something that should not be met with, oh, you know, you don't have to wait, because it's a personal kind of thing. There are other things that we don't do. I don't know how many people go, especially when Tisha B'Av is Thursday, since last Friday, without taking a shower. Don't tell me. But it's hard to do. And someone made the statement, I think, in this context of the Zoom, that today we're all considered istinous, and showering has a different kind of status that once upon a time it did. And by the way, there's not so far to believe on that, because once upon a time, bathing was a big thing. You didn't have plumbing in your house. You didn't have a hose to shower with. You went to a bathhouse, and it became a whole thing. So today, you could make a good argument for saying, I'm not taking a pleasurable shower. I'm not taking my usual 15, 20 minutes. I'm taking a 5-minute thing just to get a little not sweaty and stuff like that. And people do it. But my point is that there are a whole bunch of things that we don't, I was going to say suffer, bad word, that we're not uncom that we don't become uncomfortable because of, and you don't need to, but you need to have it in mind, and it needs to have some kind of recognition, and every person is different. Now, it's not like I mentioned on Monday where a person said, I hate haircuts, so my avelut would be to reluctantly take a haircut. Doesn't work like that. Or I don't want to get married, so I'm going to get married during the 3 weeks because I'm not happy with that. None of that stuff. I'm talking about all of the judgment calls. And as I use the example of a phone cover, you know, which is not at all, but for her, it meant something, and it gives her something to not focus on, but to accompany her through Tisha B'Av. What people should be doing is reading, learning what you're allowed to learn, and there are a zillion, maybe a zillion point three, links on the internet for Tisha B'Av Shiurim and Tisha B'Av programs. You can't possibly watch them all. You need to look at this list. I got a list from iTorah. I don't even know what it is, but they had 29 different live Shiurim, which I hope they're going to also have available on demand. But 29 Shiurim. I don't know anybody who could listen to that. And Esh HaTorah and the OU and Yeshiva University, and just goes on and on and on. So we can pick and choose and spend time on Tisha B'Av afternoon, especially in a meaningful way. Shacharit When you get up in the morning, you're only supposed to wash your fingers and your eyes if you need them with wet fingers tips. And Shacharit, men don't wear talis and tefillin, women don't either. No Birchat Kohanim. And davening is subdued. We omit the bracha of Oter Yisrael B'Tifarah. And again, that's not the end of the world if you forget to omit it. But Oter Yisrael B'Tifarah, he who crowns Israel with glory, is considered to be a reference to the Tefillin Shel Rosh, and therefore it's not appropriate to say that bracha as part of Birchat HaShachar, and you say it in the afternoon when we put on our tefillin. Now, what about a woman? Does a woman skip that bracha because she doesn't wear tefillin anyway? She says it, so she should skip it and say it in the afternoon because you're not wearing tefillin for technical reasons, but tefillin is still something.
I understand you're not supposed to say mitzadei something because of the shoes. Is
No,
that true?
Sha'asali cold turkey.
So that I understood was something to do with eating, and mitzadei gover was
No,
something to do with the
could be.
clothes, shoes.
Ra says we don't say, we shouldn't say, Sha'asali cold turkey, which he says refers to having good shoes. And I saw in a sefer that the only time you should skip that until after Tisha B'Av is if you spend Tisha B'Av totally barefoot. If you wear an alternate permissible shoe, like sneakers or canvas shoes or Crocs or whatever, then you do say it. I used to not say it, but I don't go around barefoot the whole day, and therefore I started saying it again. But I would have to, either you would have to check or I would have to check to see if I got it right with Sha'asali Kol Tzarki, or you had it with Hamechin Mitzadei Gover. I don't know.
Phil,
Cheers.
okay, thank you.
One Phil, day the longer
Cheers, sir.
without the can you give me a practical system? I have a back problem and I can't sit on low.
Then you don't.
I was just gonna say, what could I do? And do you remember when you came to pay a shiva call by me? I was sitting on my couch.
Yeah,
I
okay.
cannot sit. And I'll tell you the truth, I couldn't explain to people, everybody who came in, I cannot sit so low. What should I do tonight in shul?
You sit on a regular chair. You are not going to be the only person sitting on a regular chair. And it is well accepted. Let me give you a different example. All right? Standing. I'm doing it on purpose to take us out of the Tisha B'Av mold and go to the joyous holiday of Simchat Torah. The average person is supposed to remain standing during Hakafot because Sifrei Torah are out of the Aron and they're in motion. Any person who sits when the Torahs are being marched around is considered disrespectful to the Torah. Except when it is obvious that the person is of the age or physical ability that he can't stand. And then it's not disrespectful. So, as I've said many times, details of halacha are not supposed to make somebody suffer unduly. Obviously, especially people who have trouble getting down there and then getting back up from there. Even if they're comfortable sitting on the ground, once they're down there, they, oh, I'll stay here, I'm fine, kind of thing. But if you can't, then you don't. And no one is going to say, oh, she's not that frum because she's sitting on a regular chair. If you want to make a distinction, then don't sit on the cushion on the chair, just sit on the chair. Just like I used to tell my daughters before they reach the age of mitzvot, if you want a glass of juice on a fast day, take grapefruit juice. Oh, we don't like grapefruit juice. Perfect. Take grapefruit juice and not orange juice, which you enjoy. Save that for later. So there's all kinds of things. No cake, no ice cream, but you could eat if somebody needs to eat.
I tell you, to this day, I'm self-conscious of the fact that when people came to be Nechama Veilam,
Okay,
that I
by the
was sitting
way,
on my couch.
what I said is not going to automatically make
Yeah.
you comfortable sitting on a chair. And
Yeah.
there are still people. I told you the story. I won't mention his name. Guy was in a wheelchair, and I saw him at the Israel Center years ago at Mincha on Shivasar Batamuz, and he was crying. And I asked him why he was crying. He said, "This is the first time I'm not fasting. My doctor said I can't fast." This was not Tisha B'Av, this was Shivasar Batamuz. And I told him, I don't know if I needed to tell him, but I did. I told him that a person who is physically capable of fasting must fast. A person whose doctor says you cannot fast is not allowed to fast. There's nothing to cry about. There's nothing to feel bad about. This is your situation. You want to say, Chaval, that I'm not healthy enough to fast? Yeah, but that's not the same as thinking that you're violating a fast day. Anyone who's told you don't have to eat, but you must drink, has to drink and shouldn't feel that that person is desecrating or whatever other word you want to use, Tisha B'Av. Because that's our Yiddishkeit. Our Yiddishkeit recognizes that there are differences. You know, again, train of thought. There are some people I have heard, I don't know firsthand, who can't fast on Yom Kippur, so they have an intravenous feeding the whole day of Yom Kippur. I don't think that's at all necessary. I'm not impugning the integrity of super tzaddikim and gedolim, who might be the ones who did something like that, but I don't think that's at all necessary. If your doctor and your rav and you know that you have to eat even on Yom Kippur, that means certainly on Tisha B'Av, which means certainly, certainly on the other fast days, then you eat and you drink. You just eat and drink what you need. I have a daughter who cannot fast all the time. She asked me if she has to start until she reaches a point where she needs to eat. I said, yes. Tisha B'Av, you have to, on the other fast days, you probably don't. I said, on Tisha B'Av, if you could go through the night without eating, do that. If you could start the morning without eating, do that also. Once you reach a point where you need to eat, in her case, because of medication that she takes, which have to be on a with food, can't be on an empty stomach, then you eat. If it could be after you daven mincha, that's better even. But if not, not. This is a flexibility that's built in, and it makes Torah and mitzvot livable. It wouldn't be livable otherwise.
There's also shiurim of how much you could take
Not
if
on Tisha B'Av.
I
That's
don't
only a Yom Kippur issue.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, you should know that on Yom Kippur, there's a concept, chatzi shiur, osur min haTorah. You're not allowed to have a chatzi shiur either. But below the shiur, you're not subject to the punishment that you would be if you ate a certain amount or drank a certain amount. And therefore, on Yom Kippur, they recommend, even though it's still osur, but under a person's condition, it's better if you could do shiurim, but if you can't, then you drink regular.
Yeah.
We knew a young man who had his mother's kidney, and he was told by his Rav, who the Sadigoro Rebbe, that most people's mitzvah on Yom Kippur is to fast, and his mitzvah is to drink.
Right. My daughter also donated a kidney, and for the first at least two Yom Kippur, she had to drink. Every day, she had to drink an obscene amount of water. told her she might as well put a hose in her mouth and just keep it there. But I don't know the latest story for this Tisha B'Av or for the upcoming Yom Kippur, but it takes a while, so that's recognized. And the first story that I love attributed to Rav Yisrael Salanter, who a guy fainted on Yom Kippur in his shul, and he rushed to give him water to drink. And his Talmidim were very critical about that. They said, it seems like the Rav, they said it to him, was a little too makil on Yom Kippur. And he said, you got it wrong. I am being machmir on the health of a person. So when there's a toss-up, health wins over halacha. That's an important concept.
Well,
Yeah.
my husband once fainted in shul, not on a tannis, and the kohanim ran out of shul. Talking of running as a response.
Yeah, well, I hope they came back shortly thereafter.
They did.
Yeah.
Well,
Yeah.
am I right in thinking that you were talking about doing Nedelwasser in the morning, that after the fast you can do a full the first thing you can do is a full Nedelwasser. You just don't do it the whole of Tisha B'Av.
That's correct. And I'll tell you this, I try to, right before we start Maariv, to run and do full washing. But it wouldn't work if everybody in the shul would do that. It would just take too long. So I don't announce it. I don't teach it. I just try to do it. M further, the issue of Kiddush Levana for tomorrow night. Interesting complication. So not that you all are Kiddush Levana people, because women generally do not, although there is a shita that they should. Mostly say that they don't have to, and they don't. And some say they're not allowed to. So you've got the whole range of practice there. But the guys, according to the Vilna Gaon, the first opportunity for Kiddush Levana is 3 days after the Molad, and it doesn't matter what month it is. In other words, in Tishrei, 3 days after the Molad, this year came out to be Motzoi Shabbos last. I'm sorry, that's Tisha B'Av. You don't wait till after Yom Kippur. You don't wait till after Tisha B'Av. You don't wait till after Shavuot. Those are the three dates that people, most people, wait for Kiddush Levana. So the Gros Shita is you do it right away. So I did for Av already last Motzoi Shabbos. Many people, most people, will either be doing it tomorrow night after Tisha B'Av or Motzoi Shabbos, Motzoi Shabbat Nachamu. And there are arguments on both sides. There's one Shita that said if Tisha B'Av is Thursday, and now it's Thursday night, just push it off 2 more nights to Motzoi Shabbat Nachamu, because Kiddush Levana is an act of Kabbalat Pnei Hashchina. You're receiving the divine presence. And the proper way to do that is when you're dressed for Shabbos and perfumed for Shabbos. Whether that was referring to, I don't know. And in the Shabbos mood. So Motzoi Shabbos is the favorite time for Kiddush Levana. The Arizal says when Tisha B'Av is Thursday, you dafka do it Thursday night, because the chidush of the moon, the renewal of the moon, which this bracha acknowledges, is parallel to the renewal of Malchut Beit David, which is the coming of Mashiach. So he says it's a perfect symbolic time to say Kiddush Levana, in which, by the way, the text includes David Melech Yisrael, Chai V'Kayam 3 times, and a bunch of other things, because of that parallel between the cycle of the moon and the fate of the Jewish people. It's perfectly appropriate for Motzoi Tisha B'Av, and you shouldn't wait for Motzoi Shabbos. However, there is a preference not only to washing fully, as Judy mentioned, before Kiddush Levana, if you can't do it before Ma'ariv, but of even breaking your fast. And that's not easy. What you need to do is carry a cookie with you to Mincha and Ma'ariv and have it available when Ma'ariv is over on your way to Kiddush Levana so that you will be not coming from the mood and the feeling of the fast. It does not work well when Tisha B'Av is Motzoi Sunday, when it's on Sunday, because then you need Havdalah. And I don't think you're going to carry a kos and a wine cup and a bottle of wine with you and a cookie. So bottom line there is, if your shul has Kiddush Levana right after Ma'ariv on Tisha B'Av, do it, then go home and eat. My minyan, against my better judgment, is davening Ma'ariv kind of on the early side to the point where we're going to have to repeat Kriyat Shema before we eat, and in order that people should be able to daven Ma'ariv, say Kiddush Levana, which is probably a little too early because the sky is still not dark, and then go home and not delay eating. And the not delay eating is an important concept also. If the fast is over at 8:20, I think it is 8:20, then it's over at 8:20. And if there are two different opinions, you could take the easy one. I was very surprised that I saw it in Rav Tukachinsky's Luach Eretz Yisrael, that because Tisha B'Av is Derabbanan, we don't wait to end the fast as long as we would wait on Yom Kippur, but we take a more moderate definition of Tzeitat Kochavim, and we eat earlier. And I think that includes all of the Rabbeinu Tam people. The Rabbeinu Tam people who on Motzoi Shabbos don't say Havdalah till half an hour or more after what we would say is Shabbos over. I don't think they do that on waiting to finish the fast for another half an hour. Maybe they do. I don't know. It all depends on whether you do Rabbeinu Tam Shita as halacha or Rabbeinu Tam Shita as a nice way of extending the Shabbos. And then it doesn't apply to a fast day, but if you consider it to be Tzeitat Kochavim halachically, then it would. Again, quickly, tachlis, the restrictions of laundry, haircutting, shaving are removed from the morning of Friday. You don't have to wait till after halachic noon. And in extenuating circumstances, what do you mean by extenuating circumstances? I don't know, figure it out for yourself. You could do it Thursday night also. If let's say there's no barber available on Friday because he's booked solid and he's available with a slot on Thursday evening, so you could take a haircut on Thursday evening, whatever.
Bill,
Here's
my brother-in-law, Rabbi Zvi Flaum, is a posek in the Five Towns, and he told me that we could start laundry Thursday night after Tisha B'Av.
Okay, so the way I learned it from the two Svarim that I use, Friday morning, except under extenuating circumstances, to me, the definition of that is a family that has six or seven or eight kids have three different laundry baskets overflowing. So you say to her, "Go ahead, start your laundry tonight." But I don't think it applies to people who just about have one load to go. You could do that Friday morning also. But meat, wine, and music, chatzot, which is about a quarter to one on in Yerushalayim and slightly different elsewhere. I don't know if you're aware of this, but there are some places that lein eicha from a klaf, in which case it starts with a bracha, asher kiddushanu v'nesotav tzivanu al mikra megillah, but no shechiyonu. And the first time I ever experienced that was my first trip to Yerushalayim, Yeshurun Synagogue on King George, had a phenomenal Baal Kore. I've never heard someone that good for anything. I heard him on Shabbos also. And he leaned from a cloth, and it was a totally different experience. Also, that shul has regular cushion seating, but they have two sets of hinges. It was built so that you could remove your seat from its regular hinges and put them all the way down to another set of hinges, and you're sitting below three tefachim, which is the limit, and on a cushion seat. So I had never seen that also. It was really weird to see a full shul that if you stand in the back and you look, it looks empty because all the heads are below the level of the back of the seats. So that was a weird experience. Comments, questions? I will wish you a meaningful fast and not an overly burdensome fast, but I don't like to say have an easy fast. So we'll leave it at that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Really prepared us for tomorrow, tonight. And think of us because you will be fasting still when you break yours.